Hey everybody, we're here with Stefan, and he wants to be able to talk called Terraform, Colonize the Cloud. Just as a warning, after this you're having a coffee break, 20 minutes, feel free, serve yourselves, and yeah, I hope you all enjoy it.
Yeah. So hello everybody, my name is Stefan Landeren. I work with a Norwegian consulting company based in Oslo in Norway. And today, yeah, as he was mentioning, I'm going to talk about Terraform and how we can use Terraform with CloudStack. So what is Terraform? Terraform is a command line tool written in Go. So that pretty much means that you can run it on pretty much any platform, like OS X and Linux, and I'm going to use OS X today. And it's being developed by a company called HashiCorp, which you might have heard of. Who's heard of HashiCorp? Well, yeah, pretty much everyone. Good. Yeah, they're famous for products like Vagrant and Packer and Console Nomad, which is a container scheduler. And the cool thing about Terraform is that you can define infrastructure as code using pretty simple syntax. So HashiCorp has defined this configuration language called HashiCorp configuration language, HCL, which is really readable. It's similar to JSON. We'll get into that in just a few seconds. So you can provision stuff like servers, networks, load balancers, what have you. And the cool thing about Terraform is that it supports a lot of different clouds. And you can combine clouds, and I'll get back to that. So instead of doing a long theoretical thingy about Terraform, I'm going to do a massive live demo, pretty much. I'll be configuring some servers over in Switzerland at Exoscale, which is a CloudStack provider. Anyone here from Exoscale or working there? No? So I was going to point fingers at people if they're, you know. So it better work. So running a couple of web servers, I'll be configuring a Bastion host setup. I guess most of you are probably familiar with that. But I'll be using my YubiKey here. Some of you might have heard of that kind of stuff. Yeah, I'll be demoing that with Terraform. It's kind of cool. I'll install Apache. Well, we're at Apache Crunch, so might as well install Apache. And I'll throw in some AWS stuff to do some DNS, because that's a feature I really miss in CloudStack. So, DNS is useful, right? And in the end, I'll throw in some Japanese magic if it works. We'll see how that goes. Yeah, that's about it. So provider, that's the most fundamental concept in Terraform. And a provider in Terraform lets you talk to a cloud provider. So there's one provider for CloudStack, and there's an AWS provider, etc. And these providers shield you from all the API details of all the different clouds. So you can use the same syntax and working with different clouds. So let's have a look at that. So I'm going to use IntelliJ. I guess probably you all know IntelliJ. It's mostly used for Java stuff, right? And this is actually the community edition. And it's got some great HCL support. So I can really recommend it. So here I'm configuring the CloudStack provider, and I'm going to hit the Exoscale cloud in Switzerland, and I could have, defined the API key in here. I don't want you folks to, do bit mining or anything during my presentation, so that's why I'm keeping my keys secret using environment properties or environment variables instead. So, but you get all this code completion stuff in IntelliJ, which is kind of nice. This is it, basically. So let's see if it works. So when you use Terraform, you do a Terraform plan, which is a bit like a dry run. So there's nothing much to do here. I've just configured my provider, and it seems to be properly configured. So typically, I would have preferred or executed a plan, and then after that, I would have performed an apply to put it in effect. So there's nothing to do because I haven't defined any resources. Which brings us to the next concept, which is resources. So in Terraform, you can define resources, and a resource is really a mapping of all the stuff you can do in clouds. So a resource could be something like, let's say, a virtual machine, an IP address, a network, a load balancer, that kind of stuff. Could even be a running container, could be a DNS record, could be pretty much anything that you can find. So that's called a resource. And a resource is, the name of the resource consists of a prefix, which is the name of the provider in Terraform. And these resources have to have unique IDs. Let's have a look at that in code. So here I've defined the simplest, in my opinion, the simplest resource that you can define in Cloud Stack, which is my SSH key, public key. So as you can see, this my provider name is used as a resource, as a prefix here, right? And this would be the ID of my key pair, actually. So the combination of default in this instance and Cloud Stack SSH key pair has to be unique throughout my configuration. So if I want multiple instances of this, I'd have to have a second block which says something like Cloud Stack SSH key pair and default 2, let's say. So that would be unique as well, right? So let's try and execute that. I'll do a plan. Oh, yeah, so I was actually referencing a file here using this file syntax. So I'll just generate an SSH key real quick. Just keep or use an empty passphrase. And that should be it. We should be ready to go. So a plan. That's great. And then an apply. So that was it. And my key should be now in Switzerland at Exascale. Okay. So that's kind of neat. It's really easy to do these things, and you get it's really software defined and it's put in effect quite fast. So let's move on. So that was resources. Hang on, I'll just do I'll just apply this next configuration. So let's have a look at dependencies. So resources can depend on each other, and that will determine the order of creation. So there's like a Terraform will resolve a dependency graph based on these links between resources. So let's have a look at that. So here I've defined a security group for my web servers, and some security group rules, well, at least one. So I'll allow inbound traffic on port 80, 443, and 22, TCP style traffic. And here's my instance. So right now I'm just defining one instance. So CentOS 7 running in Geneva. And here's the reference to my key pair. So actually I can click on that and it will jump back and forth. And here's the reference to my security group.
Is the template name, template name from your Exascale provider, or is it like global template name?
Oh, the Linux CentOS thingy?
Yeah.
So no, that depends on your cloud provider. Well, on your cloud stack provider. Yeah. So you have to look that up in their, interface.
Portable.
This particular configuration? You know what? We'll get back to that. So let's see what happens. So my instance has been created. So the first thing that happened was that the security group was generated, and then my instance got put into that security group. So this apply added 3 new resources. So that's all cool. So how can I use that instance then? So it would be nice to know the IP address of my instance, right? So where do I get that from? So the thing is, when you perform an apply, Terraform will say the actual state in the cloud locally in a TF state file, just next to my configuration file, or it can be kept remotely in S3 or in they support some other backends too. And you can basically get the current state out of that state file using Terraform show. So we'll see if we can get that out of here. So whereas my configuration files looks like this stuff is my wanted state, this is the actual state, okay? So here's the IP address of my server. Oh man, there it is. So I should be able to do SSH-I cloudstack root at bam. So yeah, that's my virtual machine in Switzerland. Great stuff. Running. So, yeah, just I'll kick off and apply again. We don't have to wait for it. So, syntax. You can do lots of cool things in Terraform. There's support for variables. So that's where you can define these variable things, right? So the name of your template would be something that you could put inside a variable. And there's interpolation, string interpolation syntax support. You can do math operations, modulo, uppercase, lowercase. You can join strings and lists and split them and do stuff like that. Stuff that you find in normal, well, in pretty much any expression language, right? The stuff you expect to find, you find in there. And then they have this special keyword called count, which you can use to define a number of instances of the same type. So instead of having to repeat the same code block several times, you just say, okay, I want this instance 100 times, or whatever. And that, we'll have a look at that. So, yes. So this, we saw that before. So here's, I've introduced some variables here. So this is the name of the zone I'm using. So I've extracted that from my instance. From my, we can see that down here, right? So here I'm referring to that zone variable. And here I'm defining the number of web servers, which is 2 right now. And here we can see an example of string interpolation. So in this particular configuration, I'll get one instance with the display name web0 and the second one having the display name web1. Okay? Okay, this crashed. No worries. That happens sometimes, you know? But then you just do it again and then it works. I'm not kidding. And it's turns out there's a bug in Terraform right now. So, but yeah. And but I've used Terraform for like a year and a half now, managing something like 20 virtual private clouds in CloudStack, and it's really nice and stable and hasn't given me any trouble at all. So yeah, as you can see, it recovers nicely. And I should have now two instances, and they're called Web 0 and Web 1. So that's kind of nice because it's really incrementally changing and modifying my infrastructure, right? Okay. So that was variables. Yeah, I've thrown in the affinity group thing too. Yeah. So yeah, that's cool. So where are we? What time is it? We still have lots of time. Nice.
Does the syntax let you do comments?
What's that?
Does the syntax allow for comments?
Oh, yes. So there's actually examples of comments. So this is a comment, right? And you can do stuff like this too. They're like C++ style comments, you know, with the slash, stars, etc. And because there, actually when it comes to stuff like firewall rules like this, we, in our source code, we tend to keep details around why we have this and that opening as comments, because there's not, unfortunately, there's no support in Cloud Stack for keeping details about that as a textual description. I'd love to have that. So you can actually have it on, well, so you can make sense out of it to like, kind of sort out why you have this opening. So that was it. Let's see. So moving on, provisioning. Hang on, I'll kick off that. Perform and apply. Going back here. So a provisioner, that's a cool thing. I don't use it much personally in my project back home because it's we use Terraform for defining VPCs and then we use Ansible on top of that, but we could have used provisioners more actively. So a provisioner lets you provision stuff on right after your the creation of a resource. Yeah, question.
You said use Ansible on top. Does that mean Terraform does not have an Ansible provisioner? Because obviously things like Packer does, for example.
Yeah. So no.
Built into Terraform.
No.
Ah, okay.
So, but we could. You could. You know. Do perform a local exec, running your playbooks. Let's say. So that could be a cool thing to do, I guess. But then you'd have to ask for inventory in Ansible for, based on your cloud configuration, but you can extract that from your Terraform files, right? From your state file, so that should be quite fast. So, yeah. Well, so local exec, I'm going to do a remote exec, and I'm going to install Apache on these servers. So, let's see. So, let's look at the config file. So, here's my instance. I've defined a provisioner code block inside the instance code block. And I put this script, this bash script, inline. And I'll have Terraform will execute that remotely on my instances. And so I'm basically installing Apache and starting it up. And in order to do that, Terraform is using SSH, logging in as root, and using my private key. And it's right now it's not going to use my SSH agent because, well, the private key is not encrypted, right? So you can just read it and pass it on, sort of thing. So nothing happened because you know what? Zero added, zero changed, zero destroyed. Nothing happened. That's because a provisioner will only run right after creation, and these two resources were already created. So I'm a bit too late, sort of thing. So how do we fix that? So that's when this Terraform taint command comes to play. You can use that to mark a resource for recreation, so it will be recreated from scratch. But we'll just taint some these two instances. Everything else can be kept, right? I'll have to tank these two resources. So I'll take the first resource and the second one too. And then I'll do a apply. So what will happen now is that Terraform will first destroy my instances. And then when finished, it will start creating new ones. Okay, so this will take like hopefully, let's say, 40, 50 seconds. And as you can see, Terraform will try connecting to my instances using SSH. And it will try continue to try and do that until it gets connected. Let's see how fast they are today in Switzerland. This is in Geneva. Should take like a minute and something. All right, there we got connected. All right, and as you can see, this is the output from Yum, and it's basically installing Apache and downloading stuff. And while the other instance is still being created, that got connected too. Actually, it turns out Exascaler using KVM, in case you wonder. So these machines tend to boot up pretty quickly. I'm quite impressed, actually. So that was it. So we now have Apache running in Switzerland. Okay. So, this is all cool. I find it cool anyways. But the thing is, this is not very secure, right? This setup so far. Just one security group. So I kind of thought, how can I improve this? Let's provision my servers using a Bastion host. And let's start using YubiKeys to protect my SSH. So I'm going to use are you guys all familiar with this? Yeah? Use them much? Oh, nice. Yeah, so this is basically a hardware a smart card, a OpenPGP smart card. And you can keep your keys in there, and you can reuse that for SSH. That's kind of cool, and I'm going to use that. So how do we do it? So I'll just actually do a check out of that. And we'll actually just mark the same resources for having them paint them again, since we're going to recreate them and provision them through my Bastion host this time. I'll just kick that off in the background. Okay, so I'll have to extract my GPG. Hang on. There we go. So that's how you extract your key from your SSH key from your GPG key. That's pretty new functionality, I think, in GPG. Okay, so let's kick that off. So this looks like this, pretty much. So Terraform will act as an SSH client and connect through my Bastion to my private instances. So that's really what you do using a proxy command when you use OpenSSH. And there's actually a new shorthand now in 7.3 of OpenSSH, which is -j. So that's pretty nice. So people apparently do this more and more because they created a shorthand. So yeah. So let's have a look at the config. So I've hardened my configuration, right? I've taken out port 22 from my web security group. So I'm modifying that rule. I've added inbound traffic on port 22 from my Bastion security group. This is the most interesting part. I'm connecting now. Oh, So there is, Terraform is asking for my smart kernel. Let's put that inside. Okay. So I'm connecting through my my bastion host. I'm referring to that by using references like this. I'm going to use my the agent this time. So I'll be actually using the GPG agent emulating an SSH agent. That's how you set that up. I have a new security group for my bastion server, and I allow inbound traffic on port 22. And here you'd harden that, right? So it would just be, you know, this your local IP address or whatever. And I'm allowing outbound traffic on port 22 to my web security group, and this is my bastion, and that's about it. So that was it. Apache got installed. So stuff didn't change much, right? But it's way more secure. I have my bastion instance. I have more security groups. I have, well, no IP addresses actually. And yeah, that's it. So that's pretty cool. And let's see, where was I? Okay, so IP addresses are all cool, right? I guess I could do, you know, do a Terraform show and get the IP address of one of my web servers. Just copy that. I should be able to put that inside here. So that's Apache running there, right? So looking up details like that and using Terraform show, it's not very well. You have to really search for stuff, right? So it can be nice to define what is called an output, which lets you basically define the stuff that you're really interested in your config, which might be useful to you, or stuff that you can pass on to other tooling that you use. So let's have a look at that. Did I define that yet? I don't know. Let's have a look. That was 7, yeah. So, Terraform apply. So when you perform an apply, Terraform will output these outputs, and it will output that because that's what I defined in my code. So I've added a couple code blocks here with outputs, so my bastion IP will be extracted from this thingy here, and right here I'm actually joining a list of IP addresses coming from my web servers. And this star here, it's what they call splat syntax, and that's actually a list of IP addresses. That's because of the count keyword that I was using previously. And here I'm joining all the elements in that list using a comma and a space. So that's being output like that when you run an apply, and after that you can run a command called terraform output, which will display that like this, and you can even have Terraform converted into JSON, so you can pass it along to some other tool. Okay. Multi-provider, cool. So, the cool thing about Terraform, I find this already pretty cool, but this is even, it gets cooler, right? Because you can combine several clouds in one big cloud, which is kind of unique. With Terraform, you can't do that with stuff like CloudFormation. CloudFormation is AWS only, right? And Heat is OpenStack only, etc. So Terraform lets you combine stuff from different clouds in one cloud. So that is great, and I do that back home. And because DNS stuff is missing in CloudStack, right? I So that's why we have to do it, and Terraform is great at, you know, solving that issue for us. So how does this work? So here again, I'm configuring a second provider, the AWS provider. I'm going to do stuff in EU. So that's Frankfurt, I think, in Germany. Doesn't matter really in this situation now, because DNS is global, right? So it's, I keep my secret from you guys. Here I've defined a new variable. That's I looked that up manually. In here, I think you can find that somewhere. Let's see, where is that? Hosted zones. Yeah, this is it, right? So I looked that up manually and pasted it in here. So you'd have to modify that. So how do you modify it? Well, you can modify it directly in your file like that, or you can actually pass it in from the command line to override the value. So that's why it says default here, right? And I haven't actually, I do not have any examples of that, but you can actually, so this is actually a string variable, but you get maps and lists too, okay? And you can pass that from the command line. And here is my A record. Exascale, landroad.io. Let's see if that is live and kicking. That would be, DNS is surprising sometimes. Let's see, how is this coming along? Not so well. That's not great. Yeah, so that can be, really depends on your local network, you know? How things are set up and stuff. DNS is, so it got created, that's for sure. We can see that from here. It should be, let's have a look here. And so Google is saying they can find it. And if I do a dig, can I find it? No, I can't find it yet. So let's just quickly move somewhere else. Maybe try in Chrome. No, hasn't propagated yet. Let's try last thing. Just move somewhere else on the internet. Let's say move to back home. Let's do that just in the background and see what happens. Is stuff working? So back home things are better. So my connection is not secure, just confirm. So that's the same Apache as before, right? Okay. So that was a multi-provider setup, right? With DNS and stuff like that. And now I'm going to move, I'm going to try to put in some, mix in some Japanese magic. So this is a live demo, so bear with me. Sometimes this stuff crashes. Because this, I'm going to throw in a Japanese provider that is called Arukis, and they're still in beta. And they, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work, so you never know really. It's a cool thing, or a cool service they're trying to provide. So I'll just kick that off. Now the basic idea here is to use Amazon to route traffic between my servers in Switzerland. Some traffic there, and some traffic should hit Japan. And the Docker container I have running there, and you should be able to do that using the same domain name, right? And so 2/3 of the traffic should hit Switzerland and 1/3 Japan, and you can do that with Amazon. And you can use a routing policy, and you can choose between different ones. I'm just going to use a weighted setup, you can use geolocation. So if you're located in Japan, you probably want to use my Docker container in Japan. If you're in, you know, Switzerland, you use my local data center, etc. And I've added some health checks. So in case one of my data centers goes down, the other one will act as a fallback and get all of the traffic, regardless of where you're located or anything, right? So you get better uptime. So stuff is, it's, you know, we'll see what happens. So the configuration looks like this. So this was my Exascale domain name. Now, this is a new provider called Arukas. And I'm going to run a Arukas container, which is basically Apache on top of Alpine. And I've put in some web pages, which are actually the same web pages that you can find in the CentOS 7.2 distribution. So it will look, you know, the same. But it will be a different operating system. So this is how you run a container in Japan, and I found that pretty amazing because that's like 10 lines of code and that's it. And it just it works sometimes, you know. But when it works, it's great, nice, you know. This is, even your grandmother could do this, so that is impressive. I find that impressive. If you've tried running containers with, you know, Amazon ECS or even Google, it's a lot more code than this. So this is definitely the easiest way to run a container. So to make this work, you have to define a C name for my virtual machines in Switzerland, and I'm gonna define a C name for my container in Japan. So here's where I get the host name from Japan. Hopefully, we'll see how that goes. And here's my weighted record set. So here I'm going to use this weighted routing policy. So the number of servers is the weight I'm using to as a number for the weight that this domain, my servers in Switzerland will get. So that in this setup it's two servers, right? So weight of two. And here I'm using the alias feature in Amazon domain names. So that's unique to them. I don't think you can find that with, let's say, Google. And you put in this health check here. So in case they go down, the Swiss, if they go down, none of my traffic will get directed there. And this is pretty much the equivalent for Arukas. So I'm just running one instance in Japan. And here's my health checks. And I'm basically just asking for some static resources there. So let's see. Yes, it worked. So this sometimes it doesn't work, but this is great. Nice. I'm really excited. So because there are some shortcomings in the Arukas beta, I'll have to use a custom client to do HTTP. Well, actually HTTPS. And that, you can have a look at that. It's, you know what, we'll have a look in here. I'm gonna use this client here, called OpenSSL S Client, and pass the server name as an SNI thingy to make, so I don't get in trouble, because this is how Japan works, so I had to do it this way, and I'm passing in an actual HTTP request like this, so that's kind of cool. Let's have a look at that. I hope they'll fix that soon. You're not able to define a custom domain name for their setup in Japan, and it's a bit, they will fix everything, I'm sure. And so let's perform a request. So now 1/3 of my traffic should hit Japan and 2/3 Switzerland, right? So let's perform a request. And right now I'm hitting this is Switzerland, because this is the signature of my CentOS. Okay, so if I do a dig for www.landro.io, so yeah, that's not that's as expected. I'm hitting exascale. Now, because of round and robin, in like 28 seconds, I might be lucky and get, you know, the IP address of Japan. So 24 seconds to go. 15. Oh, I hate waiting. 9. Come on. No! So I'm stuck in Switzerland, you know, because I have two servers there, and I'm using a weighted record set of 2 instances and 1 instance in Japan. So we'll have to wait for another minute. Okay. While we wait, we can have a look at this thingy called dependency graphs. So because Terraform configs can get pretty complex, it can be nice to, you know what it really looks like in a visual thingy. So we'll do that. Just kick that up quickly. Terraform graph. So this is my infrastructure as not as code but as a PDF. And it's pretty, even this little setup is quite complex, right? But it will give you the order of creation. So everyone depends on my cloud stack provider. And then the next thing that gets recreated is the SSH key pair resource, etc. So you can really sort out what's going on. It's quite impressive, this stuff. So let's see, how's this Japanese stuff coming along? Not very well. Oh. So what can I do to trigger this? I guess I could shut down my Swiss servers and they'll be taken out of the pool. I'll do that quickly. Well, so just stop these. Stop instances. So my health check should start failing. And all my traffic should get directed to Japan, right? So I won't be able to. So it's not the waiting that is determining where I'm which country I'm hitting. Okay, so back to this stuff. So that's that can be useful at times to see what's going on. These graphs can get really big, right? I have back home, my setups are way more complex than this, so they get massive, right? But it can be nice to, you know, see, well, at least parts of what is going on. Okay. So summary. Terraform, it's a great tool for defining infrastructure as code, the way I see it. And the cool thing is you can perform incremental changes, as I did during this presentation. And you can combine stuff from different clouds in one big infrastructure, which is a really unique feature in Terraform. So, you folks didn't ask many questions, but you probably have questions now. Okay, yeah.
So you mentioned that it is similar to the concepts, approaches to cloud formation, as well as OpenStack. Have you looked at Aryatasa, which is an Apache Kubernetes project?
No. Should I?
That's more providers, and that gives people to add more providers, and it's based on an open standard.
Okay. Well, this tool is, well, it's open source too, of course.
You have to get an enterprise license for this if you deploy it using the enterprise.
No.
We found that to be the case.
No. Well, so you can look at they have an enterprise offering, but you don't have to use that. And the open source community is actively contributing code to this project. For instance, this guy in Holland, Sander van Hermelen, is contributing lots of code. And he's, well, you probably know him from the CloudStack mailing list. And he works for a company called Schubert Frilis, I guess. Yeah. So, yeah, and yeah, more questions. Yeah, he didn't back there.
You mentioned you don't use providers, but Ansible, I imagine that's because you cannot reprovision. But has that been discussed in with HashiCorp or in the community that should be possible somehow?
To reprovision?
Without tainting.
Okay, like that. Not that I know.
Okay. Is it the reason that you use Ansible instead of
the... No, it's because, well, why don't we do it? I guess it's because we're using... Don't know, really. let me think about that. We should discuss that outside afterwards. It's quite limited, the functionality you have, right? You can really just call out to one script, and in Ansible, typically you don't want sometimes you just want to run, let's say, one single tag or limit your execution to a certain number of servers. You don't have that flexibility in Terraform. You can limit execution to one resource by targeting. It's you have this target syntax. That's how this is coming along. Ah, Japan is coming alive. Well, let's see how that goes. So yeah, Japan should be working. Japan, yeah. So this is a different signature, right? So this is HTTPD on Alpine, which has a different server line. Yeah.
In the past, there would be an issue where you were expunging a VM, and then CloudStack wouldn't have expunged a VM, and the name would be
duplicate.
The name has to be unique. Did you run into those issues
where you were expunging
a VM and CloudStack was not responding fast enough?
No, I never had that problem.
Okay, well, I read it about 2 years ago or something, so
it
probably would resolve
it. Probably, yeah. Yeah. Actually, there's support in Terraform to do life cycle stuff, to have new resources created before the old one gets deleted, and stuff like that. I didn't go into that, but you can look that up. Yeah, Mark.
So you were using lifetimes of sort of 60 seconds on DNS records there.
Yeah.
Do you find browsers actually respect that? Because I've had a lot of trouble in the past.
It depends. It depends. You know?
Things they don't. They cache for 30 minutes to prevent...
It depends. They do stuff that you can't control. And in particular, your network admin is doing stuff that you can't control. And ISPs and stuff like that. It's getting better and better. So I think it's, unless you're, Netflix, you can really use this kind of stuff just to do the simple failovers. It will definitely be faster than doing this manually, right? Than transferring, IPs manually or whatever you do that.
So when I checked out Terraform a year ago, it's been a year. I made a lot of progress doing some things that I wanted to do inside the CloudStack instance, so I was pretty excited. But I always found it really odd at first when I was reading the documentation for it. It always seemed very light, and oddly light. But it seemed weird at the time, and also sort of I figured that it's they're basically telling what they intend to do. It's this very simple infrastructure as code, basically readable.
Yeah.
Is it still the same? Is it very the Docker?
Yeah. You can have a look at that.
Can't keep up because they release new versions of Terraform so rapidly.
Well, I thought there was some of that too. Like it was early days. I was like, okay, this is fine, but it was really odd when I first looked at it.
But the documentation is great. It's really it looks like this. So let's have a look at so that's provisioners and providers. So this is the Rukis provider. So it's got all the details in there, and they explain, you can use environment variables, or you can use, This is the argument reference, etc. It's really great. So that was a Rukus, and CloudStack is way more. You can do stuff, all this stuff, right? You can create IP addresses. You can do secondary IP addresses. You can do VPCs. You can set up VPNs, all that stuff, you know? And it's really nice and short and compact and readable. It's great.
Yeah.
That's
it? Okay.
This is it, yeah.
It's also nice if it, you know, if your company uses some proprietary or home-built services with their own APIs, you can roll your own provider for it too, which is nice.
Yeah. And people tend to do that. You know, people write that because it doesn't take a lot of code. So there's a framework in there, a programming framework in there which handles all of the state stuff. And so you basically just plug in the calls to your cloud, and that's it. And you can even use it for local stuff running locally, let's say something like Postgres. So you could, there's a Postgres provider in here, which will connect to your Postgres server somewhere, wherever you want really, and do stuff in there, you know? So that's kind of cool. More questions? No, that's it. So thanks, guys.